This is a special presentation of Gen Con 2010, brought to you by the Gamers Haven Podcast at gamershavenpodcast.com and the Vorpal Network at vorpalnetwork.com.
These are...
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal!
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. Huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com. Or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
This is the Vorpal Network.
This picks up real well. This is Ethan of the Gamers Haven Podcast. I'm here with...
Brian Knutson of Klausen Nerd Games.
All right, and you've got globalization on your mind.
Yeah. We got this new game called Globalization. It's a great strategy game. You are the head of a multinational conglomeration trying to build your corporate empire one company at a time. So the game kind of... on each turn, you're going to draw your income and you're going to pay your expenses. And then you can do some things like build offices and factories other places. You can sue each other.
Right.
You can put disasters in regions. And ultimately, at the end of each turn, there's an auction. Like, here's a company called Stalin Airplanes. It's a manufacturing company in Russia.
Right.
And that's another fun Easter egg of the game, is there's all these fake companies that have little really terrible puns.
Sure.
Like Raw Energy, a solar power energy company in Egypt, right?
Okay.
A couple layers of,
oh, nice.
Of pun there. So basically, you're trying to get $1 billion in net worth, and the real way you do that is having the right combination of companies. Right?
Okay.
So here you have this. There's a power tracker that keeps track of how your companies combine together for like sort of a synergy. So if you have a technology company and a media company and a finance company, that gives you the power of persuasion. It's like 100, and it's worth $100 million of perceived net worth. So it's sort of like victory point money, right? And then if you have two of the same kind of company, that gives you a monopoly, and that has a value to it. And so you go on adding bits to this little tracker to keep track of how much money you're worth, and the first to $1 billion without any debt, because you're going to have to borrow money to make money, right? The first person to get to $1 billion without any debt is the winner. And so it plays best probably with four people, plays good, and there's enough for six. And it's we have advanced copies here at Gen Con for $40, and it'll be in stores in September.
What is what's your website?
You can get we're closetnerdgames.com, and also we're part of the Sandstorm family, which is sandstormllc.com.
Sandstormllc.com. All right, and so you can pick the game up on your website or on Sandstorm's website, presumably.
We're being distributed through PSI, so you get
So your local game, our local game store should be able to pick it up at local
game store in September.
All right, in September. All right, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
This is Ethan with the Gamers Haven Podcast, and I am sitting here with
Brian Cross from Posthuman Studios.
All right, and what is it that Posthuman Studios does?
We put out Eclipse Phase, a post-apocalyptic transhuman game of science fiction, conspiracy, and horror, which is a mouthful.
Yeah, don't you mean the any award-winning Eclipse Phase?
Any and Origin award-winning.
Any and that's correct. Thank you for correcting me on that one. Well, tell me about Eclipse Phase. I know I am rather not familiar with it. I'm pretty not familiar with it, and I know probably some of our listeners know a little bit about it, but more for my benefit, what is Eclipse Phase?
Sure. Eclipse Phase, it falls into the realm of harder sci-fi, transhuman-inspired sci-fi. Mm-hmm. So people who have read books by authors like Alistair Reynolds or Richard Morgan are probably familiar with what we're talking about here. But the game itself deals with starts the default campaign 10 years after humanity has fought a losing war with artificial intelligences and basically wrecked Earth.
Right.
So we exist in space stations, barely clinging to survival, and the default campaign assumes that the players take part in what's called Firewall, which is a cross-faction organization meant to safeguard the remnants of humanity from either destroying itself or being destroyed by a variety of existential risks out there,
right.
Including some potentially suspicious non-human aliens and the AIs if they were ever to return, because they suddenly lost interest in the game and buggered off somewhere.
Oh, okay. And do we know why, or are we left to figure that out on our own?
If you read the GM section, you will know why.
Okay.
But I don't know if we want spoilers.
Well, no spoilers.
Right.
I want them to buy the book.
Right, yes. So do we. The other thing is the game, what kind of makes it unique is that it allows players to upload and digitize their consciousness and then download that into bodies, what we call morphs or shells of their choice,
right,
that can be customized for specific missions such as zero gravity or vacuum. And it also means, as long as you're current on your backup insurance, that you can't die.
Backup insurance.
Well, yeah. I mean, housing an entire personality is not cheap, so somebody's running this as a business.
That's great.
I love that.
Oops.
Yeah, oops.
Right. Missed a payment.
Sorry, we had to dock you a couple months there.
Yes. Sorry, that's great. And the big one of the big things I know about, at least, is you guys released this under Creative Commons.
We did, yes.
Which everyone says, you're crazy!
They did.
And there's that whistle again.
We're gonna have that in our possession by the end of the day, I think. We released it on Creative Commons. If you want the details on the license, it's on the website. But basically, anyone is free to download it, remix it, share it, do whatever they want with it, as long as they give us attribution and they're not trying to sell it for their own profit. If you do think that you have something, some way that we can make money, or you want to make money off of Eclipse Phase, we're open to partnering. But
I mean, that's the heart of Creative Commons right there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and it's been very successful for us.
It sounds like.
I'd say that, I mean, this was a property that was not a licensed property. This isn't a movie or a comic book or anything. That it came out of Rob my brain years and years ago. And people were like, you're crazy to do a new property in this, what's a niche kind of field for, you know, it's not fantasy, it's not pulp. It's not the easiest thing to grasp, and it's taken off, and I think it's taken off a lot of
an Origins Award and any award later, you know.
Right. And
you guys seem to be the right ones at this point.
Right.
You know?
And because people can share it and they can give it to whoever they want, and also it gets us a lot of goodwill in that no one feels that they just threw $50 down on a book that they didn't really know what it was about.
I'm going to go pirate the PDF, blah, 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 type of thing.
And we, as Adam will tell you, we like the word share instead of pirate.
So yes.
We're telling you to share the PDF.
It's the notion of respect to from you know, publisher to consumer type of thing that you guys are going for. I understand. You know?
And we actually were talking to Eric Mona from Paizo this morning and talking about that both, you know, the two games, products of the year, both take this attitude that here's the game. We want
you're right. I did not make that connection. That is correct. Yeah.
And he said that actually in one of their many acceptances.
And they kind of blur together, I'm afraid. They had so many.
but it's a point well taken that PDFs have become kind of a staple of the gaming industry,
right.
And access to those is something that gamers take for granted. And if you're trying to control that access, I don't think it ever turns out really well for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that's going to get you a lot of goodwill. And if instead you say, we want you to have our game, we want you to play our game, one of the things our players have commented upon is that they feel like they have real buy-in game when they choose to give us money. We're not...
Right, exactly.
So.
Exactly. And so Eclipse Phase is available through, obviously, Sandstorm LLC, through their stuff as well. I'm assuming you guys also have a website, which would be at...
Eclipsephase.com,
and can they get the book there as well?
Not yet. We're working on that, but they should be able to get the core book, and the GM screen are back into, after kind of a slight hiccup with the separation from Catalyst, they're back in distribution. The Sunward will be available in early September.
Do you guys do have a distributor?
We do.
Through
Sandstorm.
Through Sandstorm, so you can get this at your local game stores.
Yep,
you know, just tell them, hey, I want Eclipse Phase.
Yep, and also if you want it now, you can go to torrent sites and get it, or if you want it now and you want to give us some money, DriveThruRPG has all the products I just mentioned, including Sunward, and some PDF exclusive products like a GM NPC file. So.
Oh, very nice, very nice. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me to the Gamers Haven at Gen Con 2010.
Thank you very much.
This is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast once again. I am here with Mr. Stacy Young from Reality Blurs, who we have spoken to before in the form of Sean Preston. So what is it you do, Mr. Young?
Well, the main thing I do for Reality Blurs is I take our roleplay settings and I convert them over to the Savage World Showdown miniatures rules.
Right.
That's what I do. I take them and work up the troop lists and the scenarios.
For the Savage Showdown?
For the Savage Showdown.
What is Savage Showdown, for the benefit of our listeners?
Savage Showdown is the Savage Worlds role-playing rules, distilled down for tabletop miniature battles.
Nice. So we're talking skirmish style?
Okay. Skirmish style. You can do bigger games, but yeah, it works really well for skirmish.
And that's kind of interesting, because didn't it originate, Savage Worlds originated as a miniatures combat?
As Deadlands Great Whale Wars.
As the Great Whale Wars, and then evolved, obviously. So it's sort of a step forward / step back for it.
Exactly, yeah.
So a little polished and whatnot. So how does the how do you handle the skirmish combat? Is it still done in squares, or is it a bit more fluid than that?
You could do it with squares, but it's more fluid. I mean, generally, it's played more fluid.
Cool.
With rulers on a non-gridded
out table. Rulers on
the
table, right. Yeah, that's always a good thing. Well, what is it that you guys are doing at the con this year?
Well, our big thing that's dropped at the con, we have some pre-release copies of our Iron Dynasty Way of the Ronin, which is our samurai steampunk setting.
Yes.
So that's our big one. We still, of course, Realms of Cthulhu is still moving really well for us. We dropped that last year, but it's still a big one for us. But yeah, Iron Dynasty is our big one for the show. Yeah.
Excellent. And you, sir, are Mr. Dave Olson.
Weird Dave.
Weird Dave. also from lovely Reality Blurs. My brain is starting to melt. What is it you do, sir?
I'm a project manager for Reality Blurs, which means that I make sure everything gets done and I dance a sexy dance like that.
Okay, okay.
I actually make sure
everyone
sees Sean.
Be glad this is audio and not video.
No kidding. And also, I'm a writer. I just fill in gaps, what needs to be done. Our old school fantasy line, we've got a couple modules coming up for that that I've written. The Iron Dynasty is doing really well. I helped edit that as well as provide some additional materials. Realms of Cthulhu, can we talk about the...
Talk about whatever you want.
Mythos Tales is coming up. It's a collection of four Realms of Cthulhu scenarios written by Sean, myself, Ed Wetterman, and John Goff? John Goff.
John Goff, okay.
Yep. John Night Train. Yeah.
John Night Train. He loves it when you call him Night Train.
Night Train. I'll remember that when I see him.
I'm going to send that to him.
And I'm not sure specifically when that's going to drop, but that should be...
Within the next five years.
Within the next 5 years.
Hopefully in the next few months, just in layout.
Sure. It gets done when it gets done, right? When it's done right.
Writing's done. Editing's done. It's moving into the nebulous world of making it into a product.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you very much, you guys, for your time.
Thank you.
You're suddenly wildly nervous with the recorder sitting in front of you now, yeah.
Now
it's all on
posterity.
Record. It's for posterity, yes.
We're going to judge our posterior.
No, that's not how it works. That's not how it works.
Okay. Well, this is Ethan. Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I am sitting here with Mr. Rob DeMarco.
Rob Tremarco.
DeMarco.
And Jay Stratton.
And what's your name, sir?
Jason Keeley,
who have brought us this fine book of Fortune's Fool, which was... nominated for an Emmy, correct? Or honorable mention?
No, this is
remember.
Brand new.
This is brand new.
Product of ours last year.
Last year, nominated. Yeah. Okay.
About
1,000 things swimming through the head.
Obviously, next year this will be heavily Emily. Emily nominated.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, hopefully we'll get more than an honorable mention this next year too. That'll be nice as well. Why don't you tell me about Fortune's Fool? What is it?
Fortune's Fool is tarot-based role-playing game. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of companies have tried this, and I'm here to tell you we did it right.
Right. So
I'm extremely proud of this product. No dice at all.
Okay.
It's set in a fantasy version of the Renaissance, though there's some flexibility to the time. If you're a more traditional player, you can... So it's kind of everything you think of with fantasy role-playing games, but lose the dice and use the tarot deck for a mechanic, and it's a lot of fun to play. One of the funnest elements about it is the entire table uses one deck for the entire session.
Right. And it's a standard deck of tarot.
Standard 78-card tarot deck. Any 78-card tarot deck will work. Though language-wise, some of the really specialized decks will be hard to read.
Yeah.
You know, like there's some Cthulhu decks out there and stuff that would be pretty hard to read.
Go to your local half-price bookstore and find one pretty cheap.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we will be releasing a tarot deck. We haven't finished buying all the artwork.
I want to get the book out first.
Yeah. And one of the funnest things about it is, depending on how lucky your character is, you have these things called fate twists.
Mm-hmm.
So basically you get to manipulate the deck itself, which your character doesn't know what's happening, but you, the player, say, oh, let's take the Hermit and the Hanged Man and shuffle them into the top five cards, please. So now you know that you know what two of the top five cards are, but everyone's drawing on that deck, so those cards might be great for you, but they might be really bad for your buddy.
Right.
So they're like, you know, you pull the card and it's a victory, he pulls the card and it's a disaster. People really enjoy this game. We're very proud of it.
Excellent. And you said it's a fantasy Renaissance type of a setting. What was the logic in putting it in that sort of a setting? I mean, obviously it's done too often. So
I would have to say we like guns.
Guns are cool.
And fencing. We liked guns and fencing. So we wanted to push it just a little later than what would you call it? Traditional medieval.
Sure. You know. So you're looking more towards, you know, like the Musketeers style stuff.
Right. And also I think it's a familiar historical period that we're slightly changing. So you don't have to learn, oh, this is the new word for elf, and this is the region we call something, you know, it's very, oh, Venice, and oh, maybe I can make an Italian you know, merchant with a side...
I'm going to make an Italian halfling merchant who has a gun.
Right.
Well, yes, well, everyone has to have a gun, of course. we're all packing heat.
There was also a small consideration that the tarot deck itself was invented around the 14th century.
Right, okay.
And it was a really good fit for the game itself. You know, using the tarot deck, it sort of, that's when it came into basically existence, when it was first as a parlor game in itself.
Sure.
Before, it was hundreds of years later before it became a mystical divination tool.
Right. And we've tried to be the fantasy renaissance is a deliberately sort of slushy time period.
Sure.
So that if you want to have a, you know, musketeer style adventure one week and you want to rescue Shakespeare from a rehearsal of King Lear the next,
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, rescue Galileo from the Catholic Church the next week.
Sure.
Or, for that matter, if you're more of a traditional gamer and you want to hunt dragons in the Alps,
sure.
All of that is available.
Absolutely. Well, how do the mechanics work with the tarot cards? I think that's obviously a big question here.
Yeah, let me... the answer's in its simplest terms, a tarot deck, the minor arcana basically run from 1 to 14, if you want to think of it that way.
Sure.
Right? So when you draw a card, say you've got a score of 8, you're looking for a minor arcana score 8 or lower. Right? The major arcana, or I guess plural would be arcanum. Arcana is plural. The major arcana, the 22 major arcana, which are like the Hermit and the Hangman and the Devil, all those really famous cards, those are either, think of them as either your critical successes or your blunders.
Sure.
Right? So the minor arcana determine your typical hit or miss. The major arcana determine whether or not you have a critical hit or a critical failure, and every character's fortune structure, which cards are good for them and which cards are bad for them, are slightly different,
mm-hmm.
depending on how you make your character. So some characters are quite simply luckier than others.
Sure.
Out of the major arcana, they've just got more of them.
Right.
You know, but in that, you give up a lot to develop a lucky character. You know what I mean? If your character's very lucky, you won't have as many skills.
You'll be slightly less skilled. Maybe if you're a great fencer with a very high, you know, melee fighting number, mm-hmm. you might not be as lucky.
Right.
Because you
probably will have had to make
yourself.
Choices that are so specific that you'll be less lucky, even though you'll be a much better fighter. It's sort of a strange thing to get your head around, but it's as if you're constantly making the choice, do I want to be good or do I want to be lucky?
Sure.
As you make your character. And it works. People like it. People respond to it.
Yeah. I hope.
Yeah.
Well, when you guys set out to make a game, or whether it was Fortune's Fool, really, did you start it with the idea of using tarot cards as the mechanic, or did that just evolve?
Yeah, it did start with the tarot cards, really, about 5 or 6 years ago when I first started writing, you know, and that looked nothing like what this turned out to be, but
sure.
I first started trying to play with a tarot-based role-playing game about 6 years ago, I think. We made a couple
efforts
that didn't quite work.
Thing.
It was going to be a modern-day thing, and then there was kind of a World War II thing, and...
Mm-hmm.
But we definitely kept saying,
basically.
And we kept also trying to figure out which genre fit the mechanic.
Right.
You know what I mean? We didn't want to do a tarot-based space opera game. You know, it didn't feel right. You know, so we really hunted around for the genre that fit the mechanic. And we came up with this, and we're pretty happy with it, because we've got, like, ancient Greece was founded by elves, you know, and so we're being told to kill something. Oh my god, that's a huge cockroach. That is a motherfucking giant cockroach.
Oh, yeah, fight back.
She got him.
I mean, that was a cockroach with an armor class.
It was. Because you miss.
I did miss. It was natural. I deflected my foot. I got a big foot.
But now you guys have, what is the product that you guys have that is nominated for the Emmy this year?
It's Nobis in the City States. It is a supplement for D&D 3.5 and Pathfinder.
Mm-hmm.
Similar, I guess, feel. We put guns and fencing in it.
Sure. I sense a theme here.
We love it.
We love guns and fencing. But really what it is, it's a 3.5 and Pathfinder campaign setting.
Sure.
With really gorgeous artwork. We really found some. We were very fortunate to find some very good artists who are willing to work in our price range. It's a beautiful product, and also some very good writing in it too.
We actually, we've been playing D&D for
Since we were children.
Since we were kids, right? Yeah. And, you know, we, you know, always said, you know, what, you know, what do we like in these games? What do we want to put into them that makes it fun for us? So we wanted to write that game, the thing that we like most about.
Yeah, that campaign setting.
Know, the campaign setting, the feel of it. It's more, I would say, kind of an urban-based campaign setting rather than find an ancient dungeon and delve in it, more like here is this, you know, corrupt politician and we have to find him and stop his evil in the city, rather than, say, some ancient druidic structure. And we have lots of the fencing feat structure that we put in place. It's not class specific. You don't have to be a fighter, really, to be a fencer. You can be a wizard fencer. Mm. You won't have as many feats to spend to become that, but you can. It's not specifically limited to only fighting.
You can be a wizard fencer. You'll just be terrible at it.
Oh, no, no. I made a great wizard fencer.
I know you did.
Hideous laughter. You're dead. Stab, stab, stab.
All right, now I want to ask some real quick questions.
Mirror image. Hideous laughter, stab. I will be untouched.
I want to ask some real quick questions about you guys. Pantheon Press, obviously. What is it that got you guys into gaming and eventually into creating a company, Pantheon Press?
Well, I guess in all honesty, Pantheon Press was created. The idea first came from a friend of ours, Jason Amsler, who has now passed away, unfortunately. And he's the one who sort of brought us together and said, let's do this thing. And it was, you know, obviously very sad. He was he was a young man, and he was our business leader. But, you know, we talked afterwards and we said, this is something we have to keep doing. We game together. We all live in New York. We game together.
We live in New York?
We live in New York City. We have very different lives, but, you know.
We find the time at least once a week.
Once, if not. Once a week or more often as our wives allow us.
Get together and play, and ideas come out of these sessions that can become some stuff that we put out.
Yeah, we play all kinds of stuff, from the most traditional D&D to pretty experimental stuff. Jason really likes to run the weirdest stuff.
And the traditional stuff, too. I swing all kinds of ways.
Well, too much information there. Yeah. Yes.
We may have to edit that
in
out.
Gaming.
Jason Keeley swings all kinds of ways.
Quote.
Also sexual.
All right.
Yeah. The truth of the matter is, these are, for all three of us, I think, and for Jason Amsler as well, when he was still alive, these are true labors of love.
Sure.
Like, we would eventually, of course, like to make some money on it. Who wouldn't?
Well, I found that the whole labor of love thing is very common when it comes to guys in the industry, guys who are putting out product.
Absolutely.
I mean, the saying goes, if you want to make a small fortune out of in the gaming industry, go into it with a big one.
Yeah. Wow, we should have started with that.
It would have been nice,
fortunes.
Yeah.
What we started with was Fortune's Fool.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, that was a bad joke.
That was a good segue, yes. Well, the last question I have for you guys, I try to ask everybody as much as possible, what is it about,
briefs?
Gamers Haven likes to spread the love of the hobby, basically. It's this tabletop thing is something we all love. What keeps you guys coming back to the hobby? What keeps you guys in this? Why do you love it so much?
I do a lot of running of games, and what could be excited about running games is just constantly seeing what players will do.
Yeah.
It's always I have my own inventive ideas and thoughts and hanging around in my head, and then I just like, here's a situation, how the hell are all my friends going to deal with this? And with their characters, you know, how these crazy characters that they make up, this disparate group of, you know, generally psychopaths and murderers, how are they going to deal with this, you know, this crazy situation of, you know, an illusionist who's creating...
Right, here come these three monsters, the volcano's erupting, and what do you do?
Yeah.
And it's wonderful how inventive, you know, and how collaborative it becomes, and just constantly being surprised by players is a very fun part of gaming, for sure. I think of gaming as just, it's great storytelling. It's great storytelling. It's like, it's a collaborative way to create the basis of these amazing
tales that we tell. These great fantasy and science fiction, and even more like you would say literature. And I was just saying to somebody, the rules are what gives that story integrity.
Right.
You know what I mean? The rules give it integrity and give it stakes. Make it life or death. Make it worth, make the telling of the story very important. You know? And I feel that way very much.
Yeah.
He just likes it because he likes to eat Doritos.
I'm only in it for the Mountain Dew.
Fencing and guns, obviously.
But I mean, most of the time I'm playing, and just to be part of the group, just to see these ideas being thrown around and, traditional card and board games, like when I grew up, before I found role-playing games, it was always kind of the same thing every time you played. But this, these storytelling collaborative, sessions open up your complete imagination to any possibility. You can come up with an inventive solution to solve a problem in these games. You can't be inventive in,
Monopoly.
Say, hey, what about you? I'm going to go right now. What do you think? No, it's the same thing. Roll around the table.
Yeah. You pass go, you get $200.
That's how it works. But in role-playing games and these types of storytelling sessions specifically, I get to be as creative as I can be. And that's what I love about it.
Excellent. Well, I thank you guys for taking the time out to talk to Gamers Haven here at Gen Con. So, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Well, this is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I'm sitting here with...
Richard Iorio from Rogue Games.
All right, Richard, why don't you tell me about what is Rogue Games doing here at Gen Con?
We're actually trying to keep all our product stocked, to be honest with you.
That's a good problem to have.
I guess it is. I mean, every year I think that we can't do better than we did the years past, and then I'm always wrong, so I think I'm just going to stop trying to be right.
So how many years is this for you guys at Gen Con, then?
This is our fourth Gen Con. This is going to be the start of our fourth year in business. Mm-hmm. So our first game came out in 07. That was Colonial Gothic. And then in 08, we released Thousand Suns. We revised Colonial Gothic last year, and this year we released Shadow Sword and Spell, which is our brand new game.
Excellent.
Yeah, so Colonial Gothic is supernatural historical horror. Mm-hmm. It's what they don't teach us in school.
That's what I tell everybody. Thousand Sun is Imperial science fiction, inspired by Piper and Asimov and the writers of that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's James's, my partner's, love letter to Traveler. That's what he calls it. And then Shadow Sword and Spell is humanistic fantasy, inspired by Lovecraft, Howard, and Smith. So no elves or dwarves are anywhere to be found. You're playing straight humans and you're
humans
fighting the unknown. Yeah, it's basic is the first game. It just came out. We sold out just now. We treat basic. We call it basic for a couple of reasons. One, it's remembering our childhood. Two, it's basic adventure. By that, you're playing the hero. You got your first sword. You're out in the big wide world.
Mm-hmm.
End of the year, we're going to release Expert, and Expert is going to answer the question, "What's next?" So
right.
If you remember Howard's "With This Axe I Rule," that's what Expert's going to be about. So you got your own band of ruffians. You got the throne. You got the crown. Mm-hmm. What do you do now? So it's a different take on fantasy. It's more pulp, but each three games run on the same rule system with some slight modifications, so if you know one, you can know the other.
Sure. And what is the rule system? Just sort of a brief.
Well, we call it 12 degrees.
Okay.
We call it 12 degrees because it runs on two 12-sided dice.
Okay.
And it's target number.
So you give love to the 12-sider, which rarely gets the love.
Well, in all honesty, the 12-sided dice is my favorite dice, and it's no bull. I love the 12-sider. And when I was coming up with the rule set for Colonial Gothic, I wanted to use the 12 because I wanted it was different. And,
sure.
And what we do with 12 degrees is the baseline is it's your target number, which is either set by your skill or by your attribute. You want to roll that number or lower. Now, that target number, the harder something's going to be, it's going to be lower, so it's going to make it more difficult to go under.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's easier, it's going to be higher. Now,
right.
You can also modify things to make it easier or harder on yourself as well. So what we wanted to do is have a baseline.
baseline rule set that if you wanted to play sci-fi, you can, you know, play sci-fi. If you wanted to try horror, then you could try Colonial Gothic without having to relearn,
sure,
relearn everything. And, you know, you can even kitbash. I mean, if you wanted to run like something like Alien, you can move the insanity rules from Colonial Gothic or Shadows of
right.
Spell and port it right into A Thousand Sun with no, with little to no effort. So,
right.
And I also got a couple of fans who have been kitbashing Colonial Gothic in space. So, I mean, it's, yeah, the thought of like spaceships all in scarlet red fighting
yes.
about ragtag ruffians really makes.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, but it's what James and I have done. We designed the games we would buy,
uh-huh.
and we couldn't find the games like this, so we designed them. And,
hey, you know.
And I guess that's why we all do it. And it's kind of gratifying to see that people really wanted this style of mm-hmm. you know, gaming, which is a little easier.
It's sure.
And the rules aren't crunchy. It's designed to get you up and running without little to no effort.
Excellent.
Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah. So we got a lot in store. I'm kind of stunned by the reception. We have Expert coming out at the end of the year for Shadow Sword and Spell. We'll have the first official source book for Shadow Sword and Spell
right.
earlier next year, which will be called City, and that's going to be allowing you to do urban adventures a la Fafhrd and Grey Mouser,
mm-hmm.
and even Gygax's Saga of the Old City.
Oh, nice.
Not some of the other ones. Saga of the Old City, I feel, is a very underrated book. That's a
sure.
good urban fantasy. Colonial Gothic is going to have a lot more support.
Mm-hmm.
We got 5 books out now. There's at least 3 more on the docket for the next year. So by this time next year, there's going to be 3 more books for the line.
Right.
And then Thousand Sun, we got a lot of cool stuff in the works for Thousand Sun. So
excellent. Sounds cool.
For the long haul.
Sounds cool. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to me at Gen Con here.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
This is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast coming at Gen Con 2010, and I am here with
Nicolas Acosta.
And you guys are putting out what is the company name here? Era?
No, the company name is Visions of Essence.
Visions of Essence, all right. And you guys are putting out Eoris, is that correct?
Yes, the correct pronunciation would be Eoris.
Eoris, okay.
But we realize that's hard for English people.
Sure.
English people. People. Yeah, so.
Excellent. Now, why don't you give us a sort of a brief rundown or be as verbal as you want of what Eoris is.
All right. I rather than tell you what it is, I'm going to tell you kind of what it does.
Okay, fine.
So, just so that we don't go too long into it.
Sure.
It's a sci-fantasy psychological thriller.
Okay.
We always say it's a game that's more about questions than it is about answers.
Mm-hmm.
It's about questioning existence, the universe, your place in the universe. It is, of course, a different world. It's not on Earth. It's
sure.
And it's a different cosmology, a different universe. What else can I tell you about the mood? It's a very reflective mood. It's not only about the slaying, which, well, you do have a very nice hack and slash system, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also about the characters' feelings, thoughts, their dreams, their hopes. And it does, the system does have a lot to do with the character's psychology. And very interesting thing about the system is we have a modular system, which basically mm-hmm. means the core system is really easy to get into. And then as you go along and as you start to master it and as you start to need more things, you can make it more complex.
Sure.
So you add on pieces and add on pieces and add on pieces. And then we have something called system add-ons, which,
sure.
As the name states, are just like rules for different sorts of gameplay. Where you have, somebody wants to be a doctor, just... not just a healer, but like a doctor, and that's what they want to play to be. So we have rules for diagnostics, and we have rules for
sure.
stabilizing patients, and the difference between whether you know a species properly or not will determine mm-hmm. certain things. Yeah. So.
Excellent. And the books are absolutely gorgeous. And I see you guys went with a landscape format, sort of a widescreen format, as some people say.
Here to join me is Daniel Torres.
Daniel
He's
Torres.
The other person responsible for these books.
Okay.
And, he can tell you about why we did landscape and the style of art and how it's a bit different to your style.
Well,
Actually, we consider the fact that humans in general like to see things in a broad, in a wide area. If you look at TVs nowadays, they're all long and elongated. They're not vertical, but horizontal. So we thought maybe the landscape book would allow the pictures, the images to actually look better. And also we thought that when you're playing a role-playing game, you grab a table, and the table is always very small. It doesn't matter how big it is, it's always not that big.
Right.
So a vertical book just takes up more space, whilst a horizontal book is just more comfortable to use. It has more information, and it takes up less space. So that's why we went with the horizontal format. We also put it in a box, so the books would be taken care of.
Right. And for those of us that are horribly anal retentive about it, you can put it up on its side, and it fits on your bookshelf well.
Yeah, that was another reason for that. And the other reason for that is that we put a lot of effort in the high quality of the books. We're using
it's very evident looking at it.
The paper is very thick, so it will last a long time. We supervise the printing ourselves. And we wanted the book to be very high quality because we believe in the sanctity of role-playing, in a way. We believe that it's a hobby of the heart, and that the products in themselves should reflect that. It should be a product that people that do not know what it is should respect just because they look at it.
Sure, and the books themselves are gorgeous hardback, full color, and you guys have art quality paper in there, and it's just absolutely a stunning book. It's something that I would say would you could put out on a coffee table and have people flip through it and not even know they're looking at an RPG. You know.
Hopefully, that's one of the hopes that it will have coffee table charisma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then
that's what caught my eye when I was walking by. So.
And yes, that's one of the things. Like, this is the art is very very finely detailed, and that helps appeal to a wider, broader audience, not just the people who are already playing RPGs.
Sure.
Also younger children or just like very older people will also like it as well, which is I think is good. Another interesting fact about the art is that we didn't want to have all this sort of the composition is different and the moments are different. It's more similar to looking at a National Geographic, perhaps, where it's documentary photography, but of a world that isn't really there.
Sure.
That's hence the level of detail.
That's an interesting way to look at it. That's really inspired, I think. And as I understand it, this game's a long time coming. You guys went through several different iterations of the printing and until you got one that you really approved of.
Yeah. All right. It's been a long and bumpy ride, and because we wanted to, we've done so much. We put so much detail into the artwork and everything. So many cultural little details and all this reason. It was really frustrating to deal with printers that weren't gonna put in the same amount of effort that we did, and they gave us poor products time and time and again. And we just returned them. We just said, "Oh, sorry, we're not gonna take them. We're not gonna pay for them," and they. Well, it's over, like, we've printed three times and they went wrong. First it was color, then it was the binding, then it was the color again, and then now we had to, this new printer we work with, we had to sit down with them, we had to figure out contracts, and we had to just follow them all the way so that the process would be perfect, would follow our own standards of quality, which is what we want to deliver to people who buy the game.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I want to thank you guys for taking the time out to talk to me today.
Thank you.
And I hope it sounds like you guys have been doing very well. You ran out of the book yesterday,
yes,
I understand.
Yes.
So that's definitely a good sign. And it's for our listeners, what is your website?
It's www.eorisessence.com. That's EORIS, essence with a double S, .com.
Right. All right, and you guys are doing pre-orders now. I mean, the book is available. It is. You can get it, and I'm sure you get it off your website at this point.
You can get it through the website, but about in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, because the books are right now going through customs in the United States, so that could take a while.
Sure, but it will be available, and I'm sure...
about a month.
About a month. Get on the website, talk to your local game store, that sort of thing. It's just a beautiful, beautiful book. So.
If your local game store doesn't carry it, tell them to log on our website and contact us. We have a little piece for distributors and just people who do retail as well.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you very much.
No, thank you.
This is Ethan from Gamers Haven Podcast. I am here with...
I'll start with you.
Mike Valancourt, our director for Cthulhu Tech.
And Fraser McKay, writer and president of Wildfire.
Excellent. For Cthulhu Tech. Excellent. And that's what we're here to talk about is Cthulhu Tech. It's been out for 3 years now. It's gone through a few different iterations as far as I think you guys started, it started off with being published by Mongoose, wasn't it?
Yes, it started with Mongoose.
Technically, it started with EOS Press.
EOS Press, okay.
Well, actually, it started with another one before that. It went bankrupt, but that's ancient history.
Oh, yeah. That all aside, it's now resting firmly in your hands with Wildfire.
Actually, Wildfire is the creator and developer of Cthulhu. We are the ones that put the game together.
Right.
Our publisher, where it's resting rather comfortably, is Sandstorm.
Oh, okay.
Publishing. These guys are an amazing company. They're incredibly professional, and we couldn't be more pleased with the partnership that we've created.
Good job. Well, why don't you tell me a little bit about Cthulhu Tech, and obviously you have got some extra stuff out for it now, so sort of beyond what the core book. What is Cthulhu Tech, sort of initially, for our benefit or our listeners here?
Well, do you want to go first, Mike?
Sure. What is Cthulhu Tech? The easiest way to describe it is within Lovecraft's writing, he's always said that there was going to be a moment in time when humanity would start to be able to pull back the veil and figure out things that we weren't supposed to figure out, and in turn start to awaken things that aren't supposed to be awakened.
Right.
It's that time.
Okay.
And within that time frame, it's near future, the year's 2085. The whole thing that kicks off all of the setting is the creation of a piece of technology using non-Euclidean math and arcane tomes.
I knew the mathematicians would screw something up.
More than likely. That's why I'm right.
Every time I was going through a math class, I'm like, "It's the world's going to end. It's going to be someone's fault here.
It's going to be because of algebra.
Yeah.
Trigonometry.
I told them. Yep. I'll be the guy in the corner with the sign up there. Told you. All right.
But the basic premise along those lines is that we created this thing called the D-Engine. And the D-Engine has a nice side benefit of it. If you were to put it inside of a vehicle that mimics the shape of the actual pilot, it acts as an extension of that pilot's body. So for the first time, it allows things like humanoid mecha to be totally practical and useful as weapons of war.
Instead of big and clunky and...
Right. And nonsensical.
Yeah.
You know, in most cases.
Right.
So within that vein, the Mego end up cloning an entire race of warriors to come down to Earth and wipe us out. Now, to play to our own ego, they make them look human, just slightly genetically modify them, so that way we look at them and go like, ooh, they're alien because they have jet black skin. But the problem with all of that is that they end up finding out that the history that they were fed by the Mego and all that they represent is not legit. So they rebel against the Mego, and the Mego has to actually do the dirty work for themselves.
Oh, okay.
So you actually have, as a player option, if you play in the game, you can choose to either be a human or one of the Nazadi invaders turn friendly. Gives you some options.
Nice.
There's only basically two scales to the game itself. You have the Aeon War, which is the big rumpy, stompy mech stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what we would consider the horrors of war,
right,
where you're out on the front lines, you know, crying yourself to sleep and seeing horrible things on a daily basis and committing horrible things. And then you have the Shadow War, and the Shadow War is your more mythos investigator type campaign, but thrown in with ritualistic magic, parapsychics, and a nice fun little thing that was created specifically for the setting called Taegers. What a Taeger is it's a symbiotic warrior that was created for the Elder Society. Kind of like, if you're to think of the Guyver from the anime series,
right,
mixed in with Venom and some really screwed up creatures.
Alrighty.
So if you're to see it in public, it does not look like anything that you would think, oh, that's bio booster armor or anything crazy like that. No, you look at it and it looks like a creature, but there's actually a human being underneath all of that. So if a New Earth government soldier is walking down the street and he sees this Taeger, who's technically a good guy, in its Taeger form, it's shoot it, kill it.
Right.
And Taegers aren't exactly the kind of guys who can say go up against bullets, because they're soft and squishy and they scream and bleed. So.
Ooh.
You know, one of the things that's really important to mention about this setting is it's very detailed and it's very deep. Mm-hmm. It allows you really to be able to play on multiple levels depending on what your taste of the game is that you want to play.
Right.
So you don't have to be like a Lovecraft fan, or you don't have to be an anime fan. You can take it to whatever dimension you want.
Sure.
I mean, you do have the layer of the game, the very top layer, the Aeon War. You want to go strap on your mech, get in there and go off and do battle against the big nasties. You can do that. If you do like playing the Shadow War game, where you're the heroic figure fighting an uphill battle against the evil cult, the Mega Corporation, in the form of a Taggart, you can do that. If you like the Men in Black type of a game, you could be a government agent, you know, who's hunting down illegal sorcery or monstrous things.
Right.
Or you could go straight back to traditional occult investigating Lovecraft. Mm-hmm. Why are people disappearing in that coastal town over there somewhere?
Right, right.
So sort of
going like Blade Runner, but Cthulhu-ish.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Noir-ish. Yeah. Okay.
And it's fully contained. You don't have to have necessarily a background, full understanding of Lovecraft. I mean, you get into this book, it gives you everything you need to be able to play the game how you want to play it. The other thing I wanted to mention is it is also an evolving story.
Okay.
We're telling a story with a beginning, middle, and end through all of our supplements. We have several supplements out right now. Mm-hmm. And we do have an intention to take this cycle somewhere interesting and do something that hasn't ever been done in a Lovecraftian setting ever before. So right now, if you were to look through our books, it is getting bleaker and bleaker, but things are always the bleakest before things.
Right. So, it's darkest before the dawn, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I'd say the last thing to really quickly touch on, too, is for the people that are fans of the Shadow War. On Friday, we announced in our seminar that we're going to be having a Skirmish Shadow Wars miniature game.
Oh, nice.
And we'll be releasing that next Gen Con. One of the nice little asides on that, we don't have all the mechanics worked out yet.
Sure.
We don't have all the major details worked out. But the one thing that we can say is that all the miniatures are actually going to be fully articulated.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're being made by the guys who actually do full-scale, fully articulated Gundam models.
Ooh. So nice.
This is their first push into the miniatures market. We're really excited about what they're going to be bringing to the table. So
excellent. So fully articulated minis on the battle map. That's going to be nice.
Yeah. There's definitely a big and bright future for this property. Mm-hmm. We're just expecting to see.
Well, I mean, you guys have been around for 3 years now. So
yes.
And been through a lot.
Yeah. I mean, just what I've heard. Yeah. I mean,
I think the two songs will be Staying Alive and I Will Survive.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
That was disturbing.
I just had a sanity loss there. All right, well, I want to thank you guys for taking the time to talk to us at the Gamers Haven here at Gen Con. And you guys have a good con.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Podcast. I am here with
Mike Muldoon at Inferno.
Inferno, and that's Inferno.
.net.
What is Inferno?
Inferno is a set of online tools to help you get your game on. So there's a social network. One aspect of that is, you know, you have your profile. Your characters have their own profiles. Your game has its own profile. And all of these profiles have their own blogs. They have their own comment sections, photo. I mean, everything you expect out of a social network. But everything's been tuned and tailored to the needs of tabletop gamers.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of neat things come out of that. You know, in character blogging, everybody knows how much fun that is. But, you know, sitting down after a game and writing up your game notes, chronicling your epic exploits from the evening is just a stupid amount of fun. And then your friends are commenting on that, and your game diary now becomes this living thing that's, you know, you got all that SockNet goodness on it, and RSS feeds, and out to Twitter, and pictures, and media, and all that stuff. It's awesome fun. And a really neat benefit comes out of that as well. Now when you're looking for somebody to play with, you can go read the character blogs and figure out if they play the way you want to play.
Sure.
So that's the SockNet aspect. The other aspect is the virtual game table. And this is your kitchen table. It's voice, video, and text chat. There's a die roller in there. Your character sheets are available in tabs behind the table. Image uploads, shaped drawings. You can use these little player pogs to move pieces around on a map that you've uploaded. Super thin client. It's all in the browser. There's no additional software to install. We run on Mac, Windows, and Linux on every major browser.
Oh, good.
The idea here is to keep it nice and simple. There are no mechanics in this. We don't calculate splash damage or track initiative.
Sure.
It's your kitchen table. Play anything you want.
Mm-hmm.
Our entire goal is to build something thin and simple and light and flexible and get out of your way. Let you enjoy the game the way you want to enjoy your game. We're in beta right now. We'll be in beta for probably another 6 months. We're free while in beta. And after that, we will be a subscription service for $5 a month.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
It is, I hope, enough to, or low enough, excuse me, to really engage and get people in.
Sure.
Get that critical mass up there.
Sure, excellent. And I see you guys have a few games you're supporting, obviously, some companies you're supporting. In what way are they supporting Inferno? It sounds like you're going more of a sort of a system-neutral type of thing anyway for the widest amount of support. But how are they specifically benefiting Inferno, really, I should say, for lack of a better term? You know?
We want to support publishers, first and foremost, by getting more people playing games.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
We want to grow this market from 2 to 20 million creators.
I'm good.
Everybody in this room would love that.
Oh, yeah.
So when we go to publishers, we say, look, we want more people playing your games, and here's how they can do it. And in return, you know, we need you to get your demo teams up here and run games.
Right.
They can use Inferno to manage their communities. Mm-hmm. And watch their fans play their games. Show off their products on Inferno. You really leverage, you know, a social network that's, again, tailored to the needs of a publisher.
Sure.
To touch their clients. The biggest form of support in this relationship, though, is that we are going to be selling virtual goods for them on Inferno.
Right.
So these publishers can take assets they already have on hand, and we'll create little packs that go into the game table. So if you're going to play a game, you've got pogs and maps that are pertinent to that particular
icons and all that good stuff that you need for Victoriana or Legend of the Five Rings, etc.
And as we're agnostic, there's not a whole lot of friction in there to play anything you want. And, you know, a mm-hmm. custom map from a scenario or such, it really enriches the user experience. And
sure.
We've got some really awesome features coming in there, too. It's not just going to be images and icons and such.
Sure.
Multimedia
stuff. So some
news clips,
like
radio
good
blurbs,
content, radio blurbs.
Music.
Excellent.
It's
going to
be a lot of fun.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for your time. This is Ethan from Gamers Haven Podcast and Gen Con 2010.
Get your game on.
This is Ethan, the Gamers Haven Podcast. I'm here with Jody Black from one of our favorite companies, obviously, Pinnacle Entertainment. We're just early here at Gen Con, so we're in here before the throng of people get here. And you said you edited some books. What is it that you've done?
Oh, gosh, I should have just brought my resume. I can't remember them all.
It's okay.
But let's see. I've got editing credits in Runepunk.
Mm-hmm. Runepunk.
Yes,
nice.
All
Blurs.
Of the Solomon Kane books I've edited on those.
Excellent.
Low Life was one of my first edits, so that was a lot of fun. I can tell you some really funny stories about that one. Slipstream, I've edited on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And I've edited on some other stuff that
I'm
hasn't
sure
come out
other
yet.
Other stuff, yeah.
And then for other companies.
Let me ask you this real quick, just for the benefit of our listeners, because some people might not know, is what does an editor do?
Okay, well, for the first major part of it is just mm-hmm. grammar,
right.
Tone, flow, making sure that people understand
what it is
that
they're
reading.
So they use English good,
etc. Yeah, and for some of the stuff that Wiggy has written, it's making sure that it's not too English.
Right.
Got to fix up the English from the English. So.
Uh-huh.
But that's the most part of it. Mm-hmm. But then every now and then I'll find myself saying, okay, that doesn't work. I need
right.
to really suggest that you cut that. Or I think you might want to tweak this or so on.
Sure. So it's, as my sister-in-law said, you put on the mommy-daddy pants and sit there and make sure it actually makes sense.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Grammar cool. Nazi and, you know, person who tells you what you need to fix.
Excellent, excellent. Well, what does what's Pinnacle got out this year? Besides, obviously, we know the new Deadland stuff is huge. But what is it that Pinnacle's got out for us at Gen Con this year that we desperately must have?
I would really suggest the Savage Foes of Solomon Kane that
Savage
came out
Solomon
earlier
Kane.
This spring.
Now, for those of us that don't play the Savage Worlds of Solomon Kane, it is a Savage Worlds setting. If we wanted to buy the Savage Foes here, is it obviously Savage Worlds compatible other things, so
it's basically a bestiary for the GM.
Bestiary, sweet.
Yeah, and each chapter has the
so we can always use more monsters.
The stats for the bad guy.
Ooh.
Then a Savage Tale incorporating
and it's
the bad guy.
Beautiful book.
It is a beautiful book. And then some of the different Savage Tales work together as sort of a mini campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to use all of them, you can just use some
sure.
of them. And they're in every continent, just like the plot point campaign.
Excellent, excellent.
So it's a beautiful book. It's a nice price point. If I can find it, there we go. $35.
Yeah, so for a full color hardcover. I mean, that's great.
and it was really, really well done. I had a lot of fun editing on this one.
All right.
It's good when you just pull away from the computer cackling.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know it's a good game when you pull away from the GM screen cackling.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you very much for your time.
Nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you.
Attention now.
Yes.
All right. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone, where we don't know what we're talking
about. Hey, we do know what we're talking about. You know, we called the whole Hugo Weaving Red Skull thing, remember?
Oh, right. Fine. Where was it? The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about all kinds of gaggles.
Aaron, could you cut it with the gaggles thing? It's not working for me.
All right. Fine. The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games. Hey,
don't forget that we talk about, you know, Bruce Campbell and Christopher Lee, obviously.
Natalie Portman.
All right, guys! I'm trying to do a commercial for the Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games, tabletop gaming, all kinds of other geek stuff.
You mean that show we broadcast on Ustream?
Yes!
Wednesday, 8 Central Standard Time.
Right, at redphonezone.com. Now, can you guys just give me a minute to get this promo done?
Sure. Sorry, dude.
Yeah.
All right, from the top. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone.
Aaron, we need a tiebreaker. Okay, who would win in a fight with Galactus?
Anti-Monitor.
Galactus and Anti-Monitor. Come on.
I think the more important question would be who would win in a fight between me and you two idiots.
I guess we don't know what we're talking about.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free, 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.